Bouncing Death Kirk is a weekly Keyforge podcast focused on competitive play. The podcast is hosted by Kata Mode and Codameron. The show is here for listeners to gain a better understanding of how to evaluate decks, how to evaluate their own board position, and how to anticipate opponents' decisions. Without further ado, here's this week's episode.
Welcome to an episode of Bouncing Death Kirk. I am Kira Mode. I'm here with Codameron.
How's it going?
And today we're going to be talking about sealed play in AOA. Now, we do have Gen Con coming up in a couple weeks, so we did feel the need to include this as part of our AOA review. So we're going to be talking about sealed at large, but then we're also going to be talking about sealed as it relates to any vault tours that you may be going to as well.
Personally, I'm very excited to talk about sealed in a vault tour setting. I've been to two events. I've been to Atlanta, I've been to Origins, and despite one of them being COTA and the next one being AOA, I top-8ed in both of them. And I made a lot of very interesting decisions in my deck selection and in my play style in both of those. And they were really consistent between, even though it's a different set of cards, even though it's a different player field, it's a different ideology, a lot of the topics I thought about were the same in how I chose to pick my decks and play my decks because it was a sealed event.
Yeah, and in both of those events, we're not going to pull up the deck list or anything, but I will say that Codameron's decks were not particularly great. They were fine. But I think a large reason why you were able to do as well as you did is you were able to steal some games you probably shouldn't have stolen. And when you lost, you just got beat. It happens. But it's like, you know, if you take some of the information we're going to give in this episode, when you're playing your sealed events, it can help you steal a couple games that you probably shouldn't be able to win, and win anyways.
Yeah, and a lot of those things, I've reviewed all the games, I've really thought about them, and I really like the lessons that we're about to talk about. So let's talk about this in two sections. First, we're going to talk about when you get your three decks, you're going to have a choice of, you know, which ones am I going to play? And there are a lot of pitfalls that you can fall into that we want to kind of avoid. So we're going to talk about picking decks, and then we're going to talk about, once you've picked your deck and start your rounds, how does your play style need to change because you're in a sealed event? What's different? Why is it different? And what are the new influences on the game?
Yeah, so let's lead off with evaluating your houses. So in particular, let's say you're at a Vault Tour or you're going to Nova or something, and so you have three decks in front of you, and you're deciding between each one of the decks, you start looking at the houses. Right, and what oftentimes might happen is you may look at decks and say, okay, one deck has like one or two good houses and then a bad house, and another deck has like three solid houses, but none of those houses being as good as the best house in the other deck.
And now we're not talking that like, oh, Mars is a bad house, I don't want to have a bad house. You really want to look at your list of cards and say, does this house do its job? If you have a Shadows house that does not steal or control Amber, that is a bad house. If you have a Brobnar house that has a great amount of board control, that is a good house. If you have a Brobnar house that is really good at stealing, then what are you playing? Right? Is that a good Brobnar house? Probably not. That's not what Brobnar's strengths are.
Yeah. There's something to be said for just playing into the house strengths. If you've listened to our House Rules episode, we kind of will go over like what a house lineup looks like typically for, you know, the different roles that you could play. And it doesn't need to be exactly like that. The house roles don't change a lot between COTA and AOA, but it's more about like, you know, playing into your strengths. That doesn't mean that the other ones will be bad, but it's more one of those things where, let's say I have a Sanctum house that has like no board control and no capture abilities. It might still be okay, right? Like Sanctum can just have lineups where it's a bunch of Amber generation. So that could be very good for you, provided that the other houses also mesh well with it, but odds are that's not going to be the case, right? Odds are what's going to happen is if Sanctum's in your deck, you want it to do Sanctum things, and if it's doing non-Sanctum things, it can, or at least uncommon Sanctum things, it can kind of mess up your perception of the deck and play worse.
Yeah, so this kind of boils down to, hey, look at your decks. Or look at each of your decks one at a time. Make sure you take them out of the wrapper and actually look at the whole deck. Maybe you miss something. Maybe you miss an Amber count. But ask yourself, what's my main house? What's my burst? What's my support? Does this deck fall into that? And is there a consistency with all three of your houses? Personally, I really like to avoid decks that have a dud house. If I've got just a house that's great, and then I had a choice of decks where one of the Brobnor houses was phenomenal, and then the other two houses were just garbage, and I chose not to take it. And my friends go, why didn't you take this Brobnor house? And I go, didn't really have what I needed to bring me enough consistency throughout the tournament.
Yeah, and on the nature of, like, burst support and main house, as you know, it's very rare for a deck to actually have specifically one of each, right? It'll have, like, two of one or three of one. And what I would say is I would prefer support and main houses over burst houses, because mm-hmm. the nature of burst houses is inconsistent effects, right? It's card effects that you save up in your hand, and they're like one-shot super effectiveness. And in sealed, it's unlikely that your main house is going to be so perfectly in sync with your burst house that you'll be able to stack up like the monster six-card hand that you want. Right, so you actually would rather just have like a double main house or like two supports and a main or something.
Yeah, like the burst houses feel weird and sealed. Maybe your deck has this really cool Archimedes plus a Coward's End, and there's a Helper Bot in there, and you can do that cool thing where you archive your whole board. You know, that's less consistent in sealed and probably less good in sealed, right? If you mm-hmm. see this multi-house, multi-card combo, you have to realize that it may not be as consistent as you want it to be because you're in a sealed environment.
Yeah, and that doesn't mean burst houses are bad. It's just like, in sealed in particular, you want consistency, and so that's where you would prefer the mains and support lineups instead.
So looking at the cards, the thing that I look for is, what kind of tools do I have? If I have mm-hmm. a Poltergeist, that's better than a deck that doesn't have a Poltergeist, right? Because yep. I have this really good artifact control tool. I say, aha, I have a way to do this. If I have, you know, maybe there's a two-card combo. I really like the Save the Pack plus They're Everywhere combo. Mm-hmm. It's a decent board wipe that, okay, this is a thing that I could play towards. I've got some Glimmers. I've got a Dusk Witch. You know, I've got these tools to deal with situations that might arise, and I want them to be as flexible as possible, because any deck could come out of the woodwork and sealed. You know, in a 100-person tournament, 300 decks get opened. Some of them are going to be good. I want to have the tools to deal with them.
Yeah, the way I think about tools is, as Kodammer puts it, is like, what are the types of cards that decks are just better to have than not have? So obviously, artifact control is a big one. Unconditional creature removal, like a single target's good. A board wipe's good. A big amber play is great too. Like, in particular, like a too much to protect, a doorstep, that nature of card, or like a Briggs combo, right? Where you, like, if your opponent just gains a bunch of amber, you're not just dead in two turns, like you could just cut them off at the legs, right? So those types of cards are also good to have. But with all of these tools, the thing to keep in mind is they are tools. So all things being equal, you take the one with the tools versus the one that's not with the tools, but you don't necessarily hamper your entire deck over the tools.
And, you know, we're playing Keyforge. One of the top tools that people talk about is Amber Control. Mm-hmm. AOA is notorious for having not less amber control. I mean, yeah, less amber control, but more importantly, less consistent amber control. It's very reasonable that you pull one of your three decks and you have one amber control card. A single Anguish is not going to get you through a tournament. And a distinction that I found was really important to make, especially in that transition from Coda to AOA, is that you can't control your... You have to look at your amber control versus your ability to race. Your amber control isn't analogous to your board control tools. It's not okay if I have no amber control tools, but I can kill your board. No. If you have no amber control, that deck better have 20 amber generating cards and a bunch of stuff to just go fast. If you're considering picking a deck with no amber control, you gotta win quick.
Yeah, so if you go back way back to our pyramid episode, right? I believe it's episode 4. The reason that we put amber control at the middle of the pyramid is that if I have no amber control and you, I can never stop your keys, right? On the other hand, let's say you have enough amber control to take me off a check three times. That means in order for me to win, I need to be three turns ahead of you to win the game. Now, who knows? Maybe my deck is fast enough to do that, and then the amber control doesn't matter. And as we've seen in Archon in particular, a lot of the racing decks have very marginal amount of key control because they don't need it. Right, for them, it's more of a priority to just burn through as fast as possible. But that, what I would say in like AOA in particular is like AOA versus Coda, the top end amber control is better in AOA, but the low end amber control is significantly better in Coda. Right, like it's just in Coda, you can open up a deck, and if it just has shadows, there's a very good chance that you have probably 8 or 9 cards that can just say, capture one amber, steal one amber. Your opponent loses one amber in some fashion. Whereas you open up an AOA deck, it's hard to find even five or six.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like a lot of times you'll find a deck and it has like 2 to 4. And that's something to keep in mind when we're talking about like amber control. If you're looking at these decks, if you do find an AOA deck in one of your three and it has like 7 amber control cards, even if they're bad cards, right? Even if it's like a Board and the Redeemed, or maybe like an Umbra, or like you had to activate it like with Anguish or something.
I found Anguish
still
to be,
look at it.
I found Anguish to be kind of inconsistent, because of just the way he works in a seal environment, which is much more board focused.
Yeah, you have to play him and then damage him, right? You can't just play him out of your hand. But like still, just raw number of cards that can affect your opponent's amber is incredibly valuable in sealed AOA.
And I mean, I think that. I want to ride a deck on one Proclamation or one Grump Buggy, but I don't think I would be comfortable enough to do that with just that tool as an amber control thing. But then I think Proclamation and Grump Buggy are where we can talk about the board control aspect, because, you know, yes, okay, we're playing Keyforge, you find a deck with amber control, what big news? But in we've been talking for a couple episodes now about the importance of board control in AOA. And having those tools in sealed is very, very important.
Yeah, so one of the things I would like to point out right from the jump, as far as board control goes, is that when you're playing an Archon deck, right, if your deck isn't super board focused, you can just get away with a couple board wipes, right? So you can say, oh, I'm going to have a bunch of little weenies like Mars and Shadows and Untamed guys, and it's fine. And if their board gets a little too crazy, I'll just play one board wipe. That's not going to fly in sealed. In sealed, you need to prioritize just having a more consistent form of removal. And the most consistent form of removal is just creatures that are really big, right? Like, just give me guys that have, like, if a guy just has 5 power and no text, that's already valuable.
Yeah, you'll find yourself staring at a Lollip the Giant and realizing I just have to attack it with a 6 twice. Feels kind of weird, but that's a form of removal, right? It's nice to deal with the Dusk Witch with the Whistling Darts, but you know that Whistling Darts isn't going to do a lot for you most of the game. You have to figure out how you're going to kill, you know, the good majority of creatures and actually take control of the board, right? Little removal isn't always enough. You have to actually have the real ways to remove things, and you know, big creatures, 4, 5, 6s are important for that.
Yeah, and to Kodamron's point, another reason why you would prefer creatures to kill spells is that creatures are guaranteed value every time you draw them in sealed, right? If I draw a creature that is a 6 power guy, like I draw a Kolf the Quiet, he hits the table, it's guaranteed value. On the other hand, if I draw a like a Life for Life, it might get me value, but it might be a case that I don't want to sacrifice any of my guys, or they don't have any guys worth killing, right? So now how do I like this card now? And this goes back to the consistency thing, where we're like, maybe you don't pick a deck for a Burst House, because if you have an inconsistent card like Life for a Life, it's great in Archon when you know exactly what your sacrifice fodder is going to be, you know exactly what your meta you're going to be up against is going to be, and like what type of decks you need to worry about to choose that deck or not. In sealed, it's going to be all over the place. So like a card like that has less value inherently versus the more consistent, here's a big body, I either reap with it or I kill with it or something, and I know it's going to be good every single time.
And really the biggest difference between those two options is the one turn it takes to play it, activate it, and keep it. And, you know, there are arguments for Life for Life. I think Life for Life, 6 damage is a lot. I think there's a couple of smaller pink damage. I think They're Everywhere on its own is where I would go with that.
They're good cards. It's just like you prioritize the consistent plays over the inconsistent plays. But I think this is a good transition, because when we talk...
There's one thing that I really want to talk about with AOA Sealed, and it's something that is very personal to me that I really pick think about highly when I choose a deck, and that's the comfortability. I test enough. I don't test a ton, but, you know, I play once a week, twice a week with my friends, and I play with the similar decks a lot. Maybe we have certain play styles, and certain cards come up in our testing more often than others. I know that for Coda, I don't think I've ever played with a Guardian Demon, just because. right?
Mm-hmm.
And I know that if I were to come up in an AOA in a sealed event, I guess in Coda, and I saw a deck with three Guardian Demons, that would be a great deck, but I wouldn't feel comfortable with it. I don't know how Guardian Demons work. I don't know how their math plays out. I don't know intricate combos with them. A good example of this is when I came up with my Origins deck, and I mm-hmm. found these three key abductions. I saw the Soul Snatcher, and I saw this Mother Gun. And I did all these combos that I had been practicing with my buddies. We had been playing with Soul Snatcher. We had been thinking of Soul Snatcher. I had been doing Mother Gun into my own creatures for plays. I had been bouncing my own guys to kill stuff. And those plays really came up because I had practiced them. And, you know, we were talking about things that are really good that you might not be comfortable with. And I think a good example of this is Double Grey Riders. If you can play them into an empty board, they reap six times. It's a bunch of amber. But they're fragile. They're hard to pull off. You have to know the timing of them. You have to know what they can do. Where do you deploy them? Who are they best next to? Mm-hmm. If you've never played with that combo, it's still good, and you have to be ready to play with it in sealed. But if you have another option, maybe you don't rely on that thing that you don't know how to use.
Yeah, like with Grey Riders in particular, you have to know when you're playing towards the combo with Grey Riders and when you're just playing Grey Riders for value. That is a very big, important thing to know on that combo. And if you don't know how to do that, that doesn't necessarily mean you don't play the deck. But like, if you were going to play the deck because of the Grey Rider combos, maybe you'd look at your other deck option instead.
Yeah.
So great point. So the transition I wanted to make was, you know, we've been talking about deck selection, you know, and choosing consistency over inconsistency. And the biggest reason why we're doing that is that the way you play in sealed, particularly sealed AOA, is different than how you would play in constructed. And so one of the ways that you do that is just how you deal with threats that your opponent puts on the table.
Yeah, typically the way that you deal with threats are going to be less efficient than you would normally want them to be. A lot of the times, you know, if your opponent has a Duskwitch, if you're playing in an Archon event or even a Kodo event, you're going to have a reasonable way to kill it. You're going to have... The Nerve Blast is really the best way to kill a Duskwitch, right?
Yeah.
But, you know, in AOA, you may not have that luxury. You may have some creatures out, and no one likes fighting twice into an elusive creature, but you kind of have to, right? Sure, the Duskwitch is easy, but, you know, Lollip? Do you have to attack with both of your sixes into that? You're not going to have the removal tool. You're not going to have, the harder they come? That's the best way to remove that thing?
Yep.
You might have to deal with it in the inefficient way.
And so something that I've seen a lot in Sealed is that what will end up happening is players will have a deck that just doesn't have the proper removal tools and also doesn't have a lot of big creatures. And what ends up happening is I'll play a threat, or I'll have a turn where I play like multiple guys, and they get so scared that they just like they look and they think, oh, I have to play my board wipe here, right? Because that's the only way that they have to deal with it. Whereas if they would have just had bodies, right, that solves so many problems by just having it in sealed.
Yeah, there's a lot of times when you'll see someone, you'll play like three creatures out and they're kind of scary. Maybe it's two foxes and a Duskwitch. That's a terrifying mm-hmm. board, right? Yep. And then your opponent responds with the board wipe. They have the unlocked gateway.
Yep.
And you go, oh no, I lost my guys, but okay, here comes my four Brobnar creatures that were going to come down next turn anyway.
Yep.
Right? I mean, I guess the Duskwitch is kind of really scary to look at that, but your opponent's going to be, oh, I should have held the board wipe one more turn. Mm-hmm. And I don't know if that's even true. I think that you just have to take these plays as the inefficiencies that they are and keep rolling with your deck strategy, right?
Yeah.
And you get to push that advantage really just incrementally as quickly as possible and, you know, not look back when something doesn't go perfectly your way.
Yeah, and you don't need to respond to everything, right? You respond to the things you need to respond to, but a lot of AOA is you want to take control of the board and you want to get to six. Those are your two primary goals, and getting to six is extra important in AOA versus other formats, or for sealed anyways.
Yeah, normally when I reap to six, I don't expect to get a key, right? Nobody expects to get a key on six mm-hmm. when you're playing a typical game, right? I always say you got to reap to seven or eight because it's just understood that your opponent's going to have one steal, one capture, one key cost increase.
Yep.
But in a sealed environment, and especially a sealed AOA environment, that's not necessarily true. I find myself stealing keys. It feels like these keys are free because I just reap. You know, I could fight that skirmish fox, or you know what, I'll just reap from 5 to 6 and see what happens, and maybe I get skirmished at, but I don't lose my key, right? Yep. I would take that trade any day, right? A key at 6 because they just didn't have it seems great to me.
Yeah, they didn't have it, or it would be an unprofitable turn if they did have it, right? Hmm. Maybe they have a board and the redeemed on their side of the board, but they have, like, one Sanctum card in hand and no other Sanctum creatures. So if their turn is board and capture 2 and then play, like, a Shield of Justice or some artifact or something, that is an awful turn. And that's great for you. Whereas in Archon especially, you know, if you get to 6, they're just playing an Urchin, right? Or they're playing a Charette or something, right? Or they're playing a Grabber Jammer. Like, they're going to do something to take you off. That is just not the case in AoA Sealed.
Really, this is more about forcing your opponent to play inefficiently is either going to give you more of an advantage than it normally would, or going to hurt them more than it normally would. Playing that off turn, that off Shadows turn in an Archon event is going to be fine because none of your cards are bad, right? Your whole deck is value, or at least most of it is, because you've selected it.
Yeah.
What you have to remember is that even though you can't see their lists, they're not perfect, right? They may or may not have it. And this is really where I want to talk about the third thing that is arguably the most interesting thing about a sealed event, is that you don't get to look at your opponent's list. You get to see their houses. You get to, I don't know, maybe they discard a thing early and you go, okay, I don't have to deal with that. Maybe they have this combo. But it's all speculation, right? Yep.
Yeah, so something that players oftentimes are very uncomfortable with, but you have to do, is when you're playing sealed, you got to play into things. There's in an Archon event, you can look at someone's deck. So if I know exactly what board wipe you have, like let's say I know you have a Coward's End. I know that against a Coward's End deck, I have to attack in a way where my guys take damage, right? I want to always have like 4 or 5 damage creatures at all times. Whereas if I'm playing against a deck that has a Gateway to Dis, I know I kind of just want to reap as fast as I can because they're just going to bomb the whole board, right? Or if I know that you have a, Save the Pack, I attack in a way where my guys don't take damage, right? I want to have clean guys at all times. And it's just one of those things where in AoA, you don't know which board wipes they have, if any, right? And same thing with, like, big key removal plays, right? Like, not reaping to 12 if you have the ability to do so because you're afraid of a doorstep, you just reap to 12 in AoA.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, if I'm against Shadows, normally I'm like, oh no, they're going to have too much to protect. But if I'm in AoA Sealed, I'm just going to let the dice roll. I think it is much more likely that that they don't have it than they do. But just remember that they picked this deck out of the top. It's their top of 3 decks. So if it has Shadows in it, you know, maybe it does have that good card, right?
Yeah.
If you're in the top cut, more likely that they have the good stuff, right? You could lose games to it, but it's much more important not to be afraid of what your opponent could have, and not even just could have in their deck, but could have in their hand, right?
Yeah.
And just play your own game and push the advantage and make your opponent make those uncomfortable plays. And if they have it, they have it.
Yeah, I mean, this is also just the nature of card games, right? So, like, in card games, playing into things is part of the game, right? I think a lot of players mistakenly believe that the way to play card games perfectly is you play around everything at all times. Like, you memorize every card, you learn every combo, and you just assume that they have the nuts every single time. And, like, part of card games is you play into shit, right? You have to get a read on people, and you have to say, you know what? I don't think you have the answer here. I'm going to see if you have it, and if you don't have it, I win, right? And the more variants you introduce to the game, right, either you're playing a card game that has less draw mechanics or has less answer tools, or you're playing a sealed event, right? There's just more variance in there, and the more variance that there is, the more you need to play into things, right? So, like, you can't be, like, deathly afraid of this Chieftain Drummer Knot combo and just be trying to control the board all game if you have good ability to reap.
Right, and if they have Brobnar, then the chance, I guess you can call it the variance, the chance that they have that Drummernaut Chieftain combo is there, but not super high. Once the Drummernaut's on the table, now it's a lot more likely that they come out with that combo because they only need to find the Chieftain, right?
Yep.
And really, all of this this sealed talk is, it really boils down to, this is a much less consistent format, right? Mm-hmm. People have less consistent cards. The cards are slightly worse on in a vacuum, and we're just trying to highlight where you can exploit your opponent's inconsistencies and patch up your own, right? By playing a little bit less efficiency, you have more consistency, right?
Yeah, it's more about, like, just trying to have, like, you want to play the percentages all the way through, right? And, like, again, so many people try to treat Archon and Sealed as if they're the same format when they're not. And understanding the differences between the two formats and how you can maximize your own play, that enables you to steal a couple games. Now, before we wrap up, I do want to bring out one example, which is that, as I said, you know, the more variance there is, the more you play into things, right? Now, as you get higher and higher, right, as you get into, like, the top cut and stuff, you actually want to be watching out for more things because, as, like, Kodamer mentioned, they might have the Gengar Chieftain Drumroughnought combo the higher you go in.
I think so I know what example you're bringing up.
Yeah, I mean, but this is a good one. So, at the Voltour that Kodamer was in, he had a line of play.
Hold on. This game is fully... it's on Rob's gaming table. It's the top eight. Mm-hmm. I think it's game two. Go check it out. Those are super nice guys. They put out a really good content. He mm-hmm. commentated the whole thing. And if you look in the comments, I put a little bit of a dissertation about the game in there. I'll let Kirimo talk about it to remove my bias.
Yeah, so here's the deal. So Kodamer had a way he could play, right? He had two options, basic options. First option is you take a more conservative route, leave all your options open, et cetera, et cetera. Second option, just go hard, right? Play the Mars turn and just say, I'm playing Mars for the rest of the game and I'm pushing maximum amber, right? Those were the two choices. And he chose to go hard. Now, there was a reason why he did that. So the houses he's up against, there's a Shadows, Logos, Brobnar house, mm-hmm. right? And it's AOA. So in Coda, in particular, let's say this were Sealed Coda before the bait and switch errata. Mm-hmm. What could potentially hit you with that line of play is a bait and switch could hit you, a too much to protect could hit you, a...
principal, stockpile.
A principal and a stockpile. There's four
routine
legitimate...
job stuff.
I mean, that's multiple cards, right? Like one card options that can just burn you. There's four cards you need to really worry about. Mm-hmm. Now let's jump to AOA. So in AOA, Effervescent Principle doesn't exist, and bait and switch doesn't exist either. And it could exist as a Maverick, but it can only hit you for two at most. Mm-hmm. Right, so it's just not the same level of card. And then, so it's basically burn the stockpile and too much to protect, right? Yep. You go from four potential things that could burn you to two, right? So pushing for amber now becomes a very viable play that you wouldn't do in Archon and you wouldn't do in Coda Sealed. But in AOA Sealed, it actually is a very much a viable move. And what ended up happening is the guy had a legacy Effervescent Principle, and then he played ZYX Researcher to archive it. So he effectively had two Effervescent Principles, which then makes the pushing for amber play look really dumb. But you don't know that the Effervescent Principle is there.
It was impossible to calculate for that. I was looking at his... Yeah. He was building a Logos board, and I go, I think I even forced him into Shadows. I took his Shadows tools away, and I go, I'm just going to push my amber here. And then he had this weird amber control tool in Logos, which I did not calculate for. And that was one of the bigger reasons why my game ended up losing for me. But I was really proud of that game, though. Yeah, like, I was very happy with my line.
If he has one burn the stockpile, you're probably fine, right? But if he has, like, a burn the stockpile plus two copies of too much to protect, you just accept it, right? The double Effervescent Principle, that's one of those things you just accept. And you can't be constantly fearing of these types of things in Sealed. If it happens, it happens, and that's where you're at.
why I still stick to my game plan. I was even post game, I'm happy with how I played that, and I think I played to my outs. And if you want to read mm-hmm. about it, it's all there. But anyway, that's what we wanted to talk about as far as Sealed. It is a different format. It is less consistent, and you should be playing towards your own consistency and taking away your opponent's consistency as much as possible.
Yeah, so that wraps up this episode. If you want to learn more about Bouncing Deathquark, we have social media. We are on Facebook and we are on Twitter. We are at Deathquark for either one of them. And then via either one of our social medias, you can find an invite page to our Discord. Our Discord is where you can talk more directly to myself or Kodamer and the rest of the BDQ community. And also, if you want to support the show even more, we have merch. So via our Discord, you can find a link to our online store where you can buy shirts and mugs and bags and all sorts of other good BDQ stuff. And lastly, if you want more BDQ content, Kodamer has his own YouTube channel. He does quite a bit of Keyforge streaming. Also, anytime that we are at a Vault tour and we're recording stuff there, you can find it on Kodamer's YouTube channel. So check that out as well. Tell your friends, enjoy the show, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks a bunch.